saying it is time to get up with Tua, firing back at those who say he's injury prone. His problem is they are right. So what happens next week? Then the plan is in place for these stars to make their returns to the floor. Wendy, live with the latest on how the NBA is looking to come back. And then looking at the last couple drafts. Which number one is actually number one? Guess what? The answer is none of them, and I, for one, love it. I'll explain as we get up together on a Monday on ESPN from Bristol. Mike Greenberg here, and thank you for being there. Thank you for getting up with us, and we hope that you had a lovely and peaceful holiday weekend. A happy Easter to one and all, and especially to all of you in the medical community, medical professionals, first responders, and the others who are doing so much to keep us safe and healthy. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts, and we've got two great hours of sports coming your way starting right now with Get Up and Go, where Peter King is reporting that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell will announce the first round picks for the upcoming NFL draft from the basement of his home in Bronxville, New York. The draft is a week from Thursday. I say if it's good enough for Tom Hanks, it's good enough for the NFL. Meanwhile, Deion Sanders tweeted Sunday he was joking about being upset with Todd Gurley for deciding to wear Deion's legendary number 21 with Atlanta. Gurley said Friday Sanders had asked him not to take that number. Basketball. Rudy Gobert revealed during an Instagram live session last night that he recently spoke with his Utah teammate, Donovan Mitchell. Gobert downplayed the reported tension between the two due to Gobert's behavior before both ultimately tested positive for COVID-19. Did you watch it last night? Mr. Big Shot Chauncey Billups rallied from H-O-R down to stun NBA All-Star Trae Young in the quarterfinals of the league's horse competition, which aired last night here on ESPN. That was an upset. Billups' comeback means he will take on Mike Conley, who beat Tamika Catchings to advance. The other side of the bracket, it's Zach LaVine, who shut out Paul Pierce, going up against the WNBA's Ali Quigley, who beat Chris Paul. The semifinals will take place on Thursday. Back to the NFL. 10 more days till the draft, and the big question on everyone's mind, who is going to roll the dice? These comments were really interesting. You may have seen them over the weekend. Tua Tagovailoa trying to downplay concerns that he is injury prone. He was talking on Instagram Live with his former offensive coordinator, who's now the head coach at Maryland, Mike Locksley. And this is what Tua said, quote, "I'm not playing badminton. I'm not on the swim team. Football is a physical sport. You're going to get hurt. That just comes with it. And it was just very unfortunate that I got hurt every season. It's a part of the game. It's a contact sport. I can only control what I can control. I can't control that. But we can control who's talking football with us today. And we are delighted that Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears are ready to go. And Swaggoo, well, I'm going to start with you on this one because I thought those comments were really interesting. And I saw your notes. What do you think of what Tua said there?
Well, first of all, G, he's owning the fact that he's been injured, and he's going to have to. That's been the narrative and the conversation around Tua. But with that being said, it's not about being injured. It's about how frequent you've been injured. And we're not talking about being hurt. The difference is when you go into a training room in the NFL, they ask if you're hurt or if you're injured. Those are two totally different conversations. Tua obviously had the two high ankle sprain procedures, and then obviously this hip. So it's not about the fact that the game is badminton and people are going to get banged up. How frequently are you injured? How much time do you miss? How much is your play affected by the injuries that you're sustaining? That's the question that everybody has for Tua. And it goes back beyond even the high school based on some reports and people that I've talked to.
To be clear, the difference between injured and hurt is hurt, you can tough it out and play through. Injured, you need to sit and you need to get healthy. So, Dan, what do you make of it?
Yeah, Greeny, first of all, Tua is 100% correct. I mean, the contact or the football is a violent sport. And I remember Demaurice Smith from the Players Association used to always come into our locker room and stress the players that football was 100% injury. Like, we were all going to get hurt at some point. The chances were 100%. I focused on this part of the quote by Tua when he says, it's one of those things that I can't control. I can only control what I can control. And we often hear this phrase when it's tied to quarterbacks, live to fight another down, and we tie it to like a quarterback making a bad decision. So he, instead of throwing the football away, he forces a ball and it becomes an interception. Well, I think Tua needs to apply that phrase to his game. And we make comps all the time with these players, and we've tied Tua to maybe like a Russell Wilson type and a Drew Brees type. The reality is Tua needs to control his style of play to be less Russell Wilson, because that's how he has got himself hurt, and more Drew Brees. Drew Brees controls what he can when it comes to his availability, making sure the ball gets out of his hands and doesn't, you know, kind of leave his body susceptible to a bunch of big hits. And that is part of the reason why he's played for such a long time and been so available. So I think this is a really good quote by Tua, saying, hey, injuries are going to be part of football, but I need to control, I need to grow and mature as a player in handling the, we talked about it with Carson Wentz last year, refining your game rather than changing your game. And he did that through the regular season. And that's something Tua needs to grow on.
The part of the quote to which I took umbrage was the, I thought the downplaying of the toughness of those of us who play badminton, but let's put that aside for just a moment. And Marcus, let me ask you the question this way, because on Friday we were sitting here, Lewis Riddick was right where you are, at least on my screen. And he was talking about the comments from Trent Dilfer, in which Trent was basically comparing Tua's ability to throw the football to guys like Dan Marino and Aaron Rodgers. Now, he sort of clarified those comments Trent did over the weekend. But the point remains, people are talking about this guy like he throws it on a different level from even the good throwers we generally see. Marcus, is that right? Does he throw the ball just flat out better than most of the really good throwers we've seen come in recently?
Gee, I agree, man. When you look at the ball leave his hand, I'll never forget Greg McElroy and I were at Alabama's practice when Jalen Hurts was the starter. We were at the spring practice, and everybody kept telling us about this kid, Tua, you got to see Tua play. All of the coaches were gushing about him. The first pass we saw him throw, G, we said, okay, that's different than anybody we've seen in the SEC since we started at SEC Network, and that had been 4 years in. So when you think about some of the throws that he made, there's an out route he throws for a touchdown, I think, to Jerry Jeudy against LSU from the left side of the field across his body to the right, pinpoint accuracy. Listen, it is a different ball when it comes out of his hand. I don't care what anybody says. There are guys that can throw the football. There are guys that can put velocity on the football. And I don't know if it's because he's a lefty, because some of the prolific throws that he's made. But when Tua throws the ball, it comes out of his hand different than most guys you see throw a football.
Better, Danny? Just a better thrower?
He's not a better thrower than Dan Marino. And Aaron Rodgers, it's hard for me to put Tua into that conversation. Listen, he's a fantastic thrower of the football, but I'm not putting him up there with Marino or Aaron Rodgers. Right now, I will say this, Greeny. Find me teams in the NFL over the last decade that became great by being safe. You know, if you think about it, like the Kansas City Chiefs became great because they took a chance and went up to draft Patrick Mahomes when they didn't have to. They were a playoff team with Alex Smith. The Ravens drafted a quarterback who couldn't fit in the NFL in the Baltimore Ravens. Years ago, the Saints went onside kick at halftime in the Super Bowl. Like, yes, you're going to have to take a chance on Tua, but you're never going to be great unless you do that in the NFL.
Yeah, I, for every argument like that, I could make an argument on the other side. I understand your point. I appreciate it and respect it. I don't think I agree with it, but that's what makes this so
just
interesting. We're 10 days away from finding out. This is the latest from McShay in the mock draft now. And get ready to start hearing the name over the next 10 days, Jordan Love, a lot. He, as you see, McShay, has Love as the third quarterback off the board, going 6 overall. And then 3 spots later, he has Justin Herbert. So I know what you're wondering. Even if you're a relatively hardcore college football fan, you're wondering, who the heck is Jordan Love? Okay, again, like I say, get ready to hear his name, because he is the most polarizing quarterback prospect in this year's draft class by far. Texas Tech coach Matt Wells, who recruited and coached Love at Utah State, told ESPN that as many as 7 NFL coaches, head coaches, have called him to ask about Love over a recent 5-day span. So, Dan, let's look, tell us and show us Jordan Love, who is a name we're going to hear very early a week from Thursday night.
Yeah, Greeny, when you cut on his tape, there's just some plays that, you know, go above the X's and O's. They go above coaching, and you see this kind of very unique talent that you can make plays, or he can make plays that you look at and go, not a lot of guys can do that. Look at this clip against Colorado State. There's a backside post to his left. This is the fourth guy in the progression. It's really a little bit of a play action movement. You're trying to get out to the right, and as this play fake happens, there's nowhere for him to go, so he starts to drift back to his left. Remember, this is number four in the progression, and with his body all in crazy angles, launches this ball 60 yards downfield. I mean, his body's parallel to the line of scrimmage. His feet are off the ground, both of them, and just this sidearm flick of the wrist, and this ball goes 60 yards, perfectly thrown. And that's why I have said he has the most wow throws in this draft. He has the most throws in this draft that coaches and general managers are going to look at and go, I can't coach that. And if you look at the guys in the NFL that we marvel at, young players at that position, it is Patrick Mahomes. What's one of the things we say about him? He does stuff that I can't explain. Lamar Jackson does stuff that I can't explain. Deshaun Watson and Jordan Love has glimpses and clips on his tape that make people go, I can't coach that into a player. And so that's why there's this such a high level of intrigue, because he can go above and beyond those X's and O's.
So this is what I think is the best part of this conversation, because we use the term risk-reward a lot for Tua. There's a risk-reward. This is the more traditional risk-reward, Marcus. This is, here's a player who obviously has extraordinary talent, like leaps off the screen kind of talent. But not all the games look like that. Not all the numbers look like that. He turns the ball over a lot. That's the more traditional risk-reward. Are you willing to roll the dice on a super high draft pick, Marcus Spears, sixth overall this year, on Jordan Love's talent?
I'm not, G. And the reason being is because against really good competition, and I know team factors into that somewhat. Jordan Love just didn't play well. Four TDs, the seven picks, and 0-4 against those teams. But if you're talking about a guy that you're trying to take in the top 10, and even though he plays for Utah State, and even though he's had some success and he has some of those intangibles and some of that physical ability that jumps off the trade, and everybody wants to compare him to Patrick Mahomes, I don't know why. When I saw Jordan Love against LSU, it felt like a fish out of water. Didn't look like he would be a guy to go to the next level as far as a top 10 pick. Does he have NFL talent? Absolutely. And I don't want to bash the kid on here, but I think right now we're in this arena where everybody's puzzled, because you continue to hear Pat Mahomes, you can do that, he can throw the ball. A lot of guys, don't get me wrong, some things are guys do at a higher ability than some, but there's a lot of guys now coming through college that will wow you in shorts and a t-shirt, or that will wow you in a game with a few passes. I'm looking at the whole overall thing, and I'm just not sold on it as much as everybody else.
Dan?
I disagree with Marcus on the LSU game. I actually thought in the LSU game he did a lot of really good things. Like, there's plays in the LSU game where he stares to his right and it's a quick, like, 2-3, and he gets backside and flicks that ball to an open receiver. There's a place where he breaks the pocket and drops it over defenders. Of course he's outmanned. LSU made every quarterback look bad last year. So I would disagree with Marcus on that. It's not necessarily about the performance when looking at the quarterback position. Does this guy have things that if we break those bad habits and break those warts that he has, if we refine his game, can he elevate our football team? And Jordan Love has those traits.
All right, we're just getting rolling here. We have a full day of terrific conversation coming your way, including much more football. But up next, we will get to basketball. No date has been set for the NBA to return. But when that happens, we believe we now have the blueprint for what it will look like. You will hear it and see it in detail coming up next. But first, this moment from our friend Mr. Hembo. On this date in 2016, the great Kobe Bryant scored 60 points in his final game. Which active player has the most career 60-point games? That's the question. The answer is next. You're watching Get Up with ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters, destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and what a day this was 4 years ago on this day. If you're watching, you'll never forget it. Kobe Bryant scoring 60 points in his final NBA game. Brian Windhorst is with us this morning, our NBA insider extraordinaire, and he'll answer the question after this.
It is the final game of Kobe Bryant's career.
I'm happy doing it one last time. It's pretty cool.
This last game is going hard as hell every single time down.
For the final time, number 24, Kobe Bryant.
Get Kobe the ball.
35 for Kobe, putting on a show one last time.
You laughed at me when I said I thought he was going to get 50.
I did.
They got 7.5 more minutes than that body of yours?
Absolutely. 50-point game in his farewell. Stuff tonight.
Oh!
60. One of the great farewell performances in any sport.
We're 4 years ago today. Feels so different watching it now, but one way or another, Brian Windhorst is with us. And so Kobe with the 60 there, Windy. Who is the active player who has the most career 60-point games?
You know, you got to think about guys who don't have other big-time scorers on their team. So you think about guys like Klay Thompson or Steph Curry, but they play together. I know LeBron's only had one. So I was thinking either James Harden or Damian Lillard, because I know Lillard has lit it up. And so I'm going to go with Lillard sort of as a sneaky guy in that. Well, I think maybe he may have like three or four.
I love the guess. He's second. Harden was the answer. You talked yourself out of the right one. James Harden has four career 60-point games. Lillard is the only other active player with more than one. He has two career 60-point games. So you were,
oh, I would thought he had more.
You were close. Close. We'll accept close. It's not right, but it's close. Meanwhile, it's been just over a month since the NBA season was suspended due to the pandemic, and the league is still waiting to see if or when it will be able to restart. And so, Wendy, that's the primary reason we had you here today. What can you tell us? I was reading some of your stuff over the weekend about the NBA's reopening plans and what we expect it maybe to look like if and when they are able to get going.
Yeah, Greeny. Like, first off, there's no official plan on anything yet because the NBA isn't making any decisions until May. But Adam Silver has been very clear with everybody who works in the NBA, which is if you've got ideas, please bring them to us. And one of the things that teams and trainers and medical personnel have been talking about is, well, if the season can continue, how long does it take to get going? And one of the plans that has been presented is a 25-day process to get back in, which would be 11 days. This is the way it's been told to me. 11 days of individual workouts where you'd still have some distancing as you transition back to the game. And then if you had clearance from all the health officials to play 5-on-5 basketball, 2 weeks of training camp. Now, whether this plan actually gets enacted or not, I think it's clear, Greeny, that in talking to people around the league, they would like 3, 4, even 5 weeks to get back to playing. So if we get past this and we get the green light, it's still going to be a while before we could see basketball.
And that doesn't take into account, this plan doesn't necessarily dictate whether it's regular season games that we come back to or we start the postseason immediately or any of
That's
those
right.
options. Those remain separate from the notion of the 25 days that it would be required before they could actually start playing games that count one way or the other.
Yeah, and in all honesty, like, all of this is up to negotiation, and we don't know the calendar or anything. And I do think it's actually smart that Adam Silver has said, listen, we're not going to go day by day here. We're just going to wait until May 1st and see. But obviously, there's a lot of people in the league working on this, and they are really concerned about injuries on players. Some people I've seen compare this to the lockout back in 2011, but that's just not accurate because a lot of these guys aren't playing basketball. Yeah, if you have a great house with a beautiful indoor gym or you have access to something like that, you are playing by yourself maybe. But in the lockout, these guys are playing exhibition games and stuff. They are really, the trainers and medical personnel are really worried if there's a restart, that there could be injuries, even in the practices leading up.
I think it's an incredibly important point because, yes, we all envision the top-level NBA stars who probably even in this social distancing climate in which we exist have access to whatever workout equipment they could ever possibly want and basketball equipment. But a huge number of players in the league, I won't put a percentage on it, probably don't have access to almost anything that would keep them in the kind of condition you would need. So I think that's the thinking there, right?
Yeah, and if you just watched the horse game last night, you saw the different facilities guys were using. You know, Trae Young was shooting at a kind of a rickety, you know, court outside of his house. You had Mike Conley in this gorgeous home gym. Giannis Antetokounmpo spoke earlier this month about he didn't have a hoop to shoot in. I hope that's been remedied in one way or another by now. But, you know, I talked to one team who said 10 or 11 of our guys live in apartments. Where their gyms, even though they're nice apartments, their gyms are shut down. Yes, we can send them a Peloton, we can send them a treadmill, but how can we expect them to stay in shape living in an apartment? So this is a big factor. The NBA would love to get its facilities reopened, but as Adam Silver said, we're going to wait and listen to the experts and don't ask us anything until after May 1st.
And one final thing for you here. When I had Woj on last week, we were talking about dates, just trying to put some sort of general timetable on all of this. And the suggestion he gave me overwhelmingly was they don't want to do anything that is going to push the beginning of next season off. So he was looking at Labor Day as sort of the last possible day they might be looking at continuing to play. Is that still the sense that you are getting?
Yeah, Adam Silver multiple times while committing to nothing about this season has made it clear that they don't want to harm next season. And so that is the natural backstop. So maybe you could delay a mid-October start a little bit, but you would not want to harm that. So, you know, in theory, Greeny, if they prioritize getting the season in, they could let it go till whenever. But if there's a backstop, it probably is early September, and that's a reality that they're going to have to come to.
All right, Wendy, great to see you. Thank you very much for doing this morning. We'll see you as the week goes on with whatever news we find. Meanwhile, as we continue back to football, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, top picks in the draft the last 2 years. Joe Burrow will be this year. Of the three, who's number one? That answer is next.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
When you see me coming, you better hold on tight.
I think when you get on the field, you have to flip a switch if you want to be one of the greats.
He's thrown for 7, and now he's rushed for 1.
Burrow going to launch downfield. Touchdown!
Burrow said, time to fit me for that rig.
So many things we don't know about what will happen in 10 days, but we think we know what will happen with that guy. Joe Burrow expected to be the third consecutive quarterback to go number one overall. And here's Laura Rutledge, who has covered not only Burrow's entire career, but that of the previous two. Laura, let's take a look backwards so we can project forwards.
Well, Greeny, it's so interesting to track number one overall picks and see how they end up. And of course, as you mentioned, there's Joe Burrow this year, but the last 2 years, those number one overall picks have a whole lot in common.
With the first pick in the NFL draft.
What do you get with the number one overall pick in the NFL draft?
Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, quarterback, Oklahoma.
Well, for two straight years, it's gotten you an Oklahoma quarterback who's also won the Heisman Trophy. Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray have one more thing in common. They're set up for enormous seasons ahead.
Baker Mayfield is going to be the best quarterback in that division.
I'm not talking about a new and improved Baker. I'm saying he'll just get back to being the player he's always been. The Baker who set the rookie touchdown record in 2018 and led the Browns to their best record in more than a decade. The Baker who's learned a few things along the way.
Let's just be honest. I put my foot in my mouth a lot this past year, and I'm going to internalize that, and I think that's the way I need to handle it.
Let's not forget, the Browns have what looks like a fantasy roster when it comes to offensive weapons. Under Kevin Stefanski, his fourth NFL head coach in three seasons, Baker will finally find the magic we thought we'd see last season. How about last year's number one pick?
Murray's going to score. Touchdown.
Kyler Murray had a really good year.
Kyler Murray is that talented.
You know, the guy many said was too short with the coach who wasn't supposed to succeed. Turns out Kyler did just fine, winning Offensive Rookie of the Year in 2019. He was the second most accurate quarterback on deep throws behind only Russell Wilson. And now he has DeAndre Hopkins, who catches everything. Kyler beat Baker the only time they faced off as pros, but they'll compete for a lot more down the road, maybe even personalized hardware. If you don't believe in these two quarterbacks, it's time to start sooner rather than later.
So much of being a number one overall pick has to do with your situation. And when it relates to Baker Mayfield specifically, you heard it there. Kevin Stefanski, his fourth NFL head coach, but also his sixth head coach in five seasons, going greeny all the way back to 2016 at Oklahoma.
And so how does Burrow fit in with those two? And we'll bring Dan and Marcus in here. But Laura, I'll start with you because, again, you were there with him through this. And frankly, Mayfield was phenomenal in college. Murray was phenomenal in college. Burrow had a season that was better than maybe any we've ever seen. How does Burrow fit if you're putting them in sort of a pecking order?
Yeah, it's hard to say, you know, one way or the other, because so much of it does matter on what's going to happen at their next level. But I think if I were to choose between the three to start an organization right now, I would still choose Kyler Murray. And this is so hard for me because I love Joe Burrow and I think that Baker Mayfield's phenomenal. But Kyler Murray is a guy that, first of all, I've never seen someone hate losing more than Kyler Murray. It eats at him. It absolutely gets to every part of his being. Also, in today's NFL, this is the other big reason why I would start my organization with Kyler Murray. The athleticism is so important. You look at what's important right now for the future of the league, the quarterbacks we talk about. It's Lamar Jackson. It's, of course, Patrick Mahomes. It's Deshaun Watson. These guys that have that complement of athletic ability and can be dynamic athletes, but can also throw the football so well. Kyler Murray fits into that mold for me. And so that's why I would pick him.
It's an interesting question. Dan, same to you. Of those three guys out there right now for you to choose from, which one are you taking?
I would take Joe Burrow to start my organization right now out of those three guys, Greeny. Everything that we look at with the quarterback position and we tie it to all-time greats, Joe Burrow has that stuff. Like, if you talk movement in the pocket, Joe Burrow's got it in folds. Like, if you're talking about the ability to see the field, Joe Burrow's, that's one of his great strengths. Ball placement. Joe Burrow has elite NFL ball placement. My greatest favorite, my most favorite thing about him is there's just zero panic in his game. Like, zero panic. And these are things that we tie to guys who are all-time greats. Joe Namath and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. And it seems like Burrow just has a little bit of each of that, or that trait from each one of those guys. I would take Joe Burrow because he's got so many things in his game that I see as the most important attributes to quarterback play.
How about you, Marcus?
Yeah, it's Joe Burrow for me, and I go back to him being carried off the field after Alabama win. 8 years, obviously, we were gonna get up the following week. But when you think about what this guy accomplished during one season, not from a number standpoint, from how his teammates respected and knew that they were going to win the game because he was playing quarterback, the intangible things, and not saying that Kyle and Baker doesn't have that because their truth followed them as well. But I've never seen a culture change or a culture shift in any football organization as long as I've been covering it, and almost since I've been playing it, than when I saw Joe Burrow and how his LSU teammates responded and reacted to him, and also how he changed the culture of LSU not having a quarterback for so much time. So when I think about the intangible things, we know what he did on the field. That's not up for discussion. When I look behind the scenes and how Joe Burrow affected everyone around him, from players including coaches, that's the guy that I would start with as well.
All right, so you guys aren't getting off quite this easy. You know I have a wrinkle. I only have about a minute and a half. Laura, you're first. If I were to add Tua Tagovailoa to this mix, would it change your pick?
Oh, man. No. I'm still going to go with Kyler Murray, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that so far, just maybe it's luck, maybe it has more to do with it, something else, but he's been more durable, and that's super important as well.
Danny?
It wouldn't change my pick, Greeny. I think that highly of Joe Burrow. I think in 15 years from now, we're going to look back and talk about Joe Burrow as being one of the better quarterbacks we've seen in the NFL ever.
I got one more shot. Marcus? Okay, it's just the face.
You know what?
Sometimes the face tells the entire story. What is that? A picture is worth 1,000 words. Swagoo's face is worth 1,000,000 words.
You know I got it.
But in the next hour, I'll give you another option that might be better than any of these we've described, and that's an argument I'm going to win. Meanwhile, coming up next, after we wrap up today, it will be First Take, followed by SportsCenter, and then NFL Live at 3 o'clock. Rachel Nichols on The Jump returns. Then it's our look at this year's quarterback draft class. SportsCenter is back at 5. The PTI guys will join at 5:30, and we cap another day here, a full day on ESPN with SportsCenter tonight. We are here with you to get through this together all day long. Meanwhile, as we continue, last week we told you about a plan to start the Major League season in Arizona. Where does that stand? What are the roadblocks? The answers are next. Get up with ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Back on Get Up, and it's been over 2 weeks since the baseball regular season was supposed to begin. Still, we wait for that first pitch to be thrown. As last reported, Major League Baseball is focusing on a plan to begin as early as May in the Phoenix area while living in relative isolation. I believe a biosphere was the term that our Jeff Passan used, and Jeff is back with us here, our baseball insider, as we sort of try and put this together. So, Jeff, you had that story last week about them looking into Arizona as a potential bubble location. Where do we currently stand on those plans for beginning a season?
Yeah, right now, Greeny, I think we're in a bit of a holding pattern, because ultimately, if this is going to get done, it's not just Major League Baseball's choice. The players need to be on board, too. And the MLB Players Association last week was sort of surveying among its members their thoughts on a different variation of plans. There's, of course, the Arizona plan. There's one in Arizona and Florida, which is much less viable, both politically and functionally. And there was this Tim Kirkjian said a couple weeks ago, this thought that maybe we could just export baseball to Japan. I don't think that one's going to be happening. When it's all said and done, it seems like it's going to be Arizona or bust for Major League Baseball. And they have to get to the point where they say to themselves, okay, this is what we're going to try to do, even if we can't ultimately pull it off.
You know, as we talk about the players' side in all of this, I was reading a story this weekend in which Zach Wheeler, the pitcher, was saying that his wife is due to have a baby. I think it was in mid-June or sometime during the season, clearly. And he was saying he's not going to miss that, to live in a biosphere, inside of a bubble. It creates real life concerns for people who would have to be, basically committing themselves to separating themselves from society for a period of multiple months. What are you hearing from players about that?
I'm hearing the same thing from a fair number of players, Greeny. But here's the hope. The hope is that this starts off as a biosphere. And eventually we get to the point in this country through testing and through antibody testing and through understanding a little better what the coronavirus exactly is, that they can move beyond this biosphere and go back to their cities. And even though they will probably be playing in empty stadiums for the rest of the year, the idea is that this would be a 2 or maybe 3 month thing as opposed to a 4 or 5 or 6 month thing okay. that encapsulates the entire season. Now, of course, there is the possibility that it turns into that, but idealistically, they want to spend as little time as they can in Arizona.
Fair enough. But I mean, whatever the expression is, in for a dime, in for a dollar. If you go to Arizona and you start there and you can't figure out a way to get out, you're basically in it. You're not going to call the season off 2 months into it if you're playing along the way. What are the potential financial ramifications that we're looking at big picture here amongst all the different options?
I mean, they're enormous. They're enormous for everybody involved. And that's really what's driving a lot of this, not just in Major League Baseball, but in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, all sports. We are looking at the finances. Major League Baseball, Greeny, is a $10 billion plus a year industry, all in all. And if you go from $10 billion down to about zero, if you go from the players $4 billion to $170 million they've been given, it is a bad situation for everybody involved.
All right, Jeff, we will look forward to having you all week long. Whenever there is news coming out of baseball, we will be right on top of it for you. And then tomorrow, our weekly flashback to some of the more unforgettable games ever continues with this one. Game one, the 88 series, A's and Dodgers. Kirk Gibson figures prominently in that one. 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. Along a similar line to what we were talking about with Jeff, you got college football still assessing how the pandemic might impact the start of their season. And on Friday, Gene Smith, who was the athletic director at Ohio State, was asked about playing games without fans. And he made a very interesting and important point.
Now that one I've thought about a little bit. I struggle with that concept because, when I first heard that, I said, okay, that could work. But then I figured that if we don't have fans in that stands, that means that we've determined it's not safe for them in a gathering environment. So why would it be safe for the player?
That, I think, is such an interesting and important point. And as my crew comes back, Laura, it was in your notes this morning that I saw you have a lot on this notion. Again, we're talking about Major League Baseball players getting paid all of this money to go live in a bubble. On the college level, for any number of reasons that I'd love you to get into, that's just not on the list of options.
It's so much more complicated, Greeny, mainly for the fact that they do want to try and make sure that everybody is healthy and safe through all of this. And it's just not possible to put college football in some sort of bubble, as we all know. And so through that, these athletic directors, these conference commissioners, these coaches, they're having to think about the safety and health of their players. And through talking to a lot of college coaches, even just over the past couple of weeks, so many have even changed their opinion about this. Some have stayed steadfast and saying that if it's not safe for the fans to be somewhere, it's not safe for our players to play. And then yet you'll still find some of these coaches who many of you have heard that have said, look, we've got to figure out some way to play college football at this point, no matter what. And so there's just a lot here. I think the one thing to point out for college football, the timeline really starts to become very serious around the end of May and early June. At that point, they have to start making some sort of decisions. Can they come back sometime around the middle of July? Is that even possible? And if they come back, is it able to start the season on time? I think that's the main thing. If not, I would not be surprised if we see college football push back. And guys, this is where it really gets interesting. Could you see a season that starts in, say, November, maybe a little bit later? Is it a truncated season? These are the conversations that are going on right now. I still believe there will be a college football season in the 2020-2021 school year, but I really would not be surprised if it gets delayed. And that's for the ultimate health and safety of everybody involved.
Right. This is such interesting stuff. So, Marcus, I'll come to you here. I'm the parent of a college student. She is home right now taking all of her classes online. Students are not on campus anywhere, I don't think. So my question is, if that continues to be the reality, we don't know what August and September are going to look like. Is there any way you can have the football players come back and play if the rest of the student body is not allowed to be on campus?
Gee, yes. And listen, yes is not being insensitive to what's going on, but if there's a way that these college coaches, administrations can isolate football players and the staff and try to figure out some kind of way similar to what the professional ranks are doing, i.e. professional ranks, they're going to get college football back. Now, do I agree with it 100%? No, because you still have college players that will be around their families per se, unless you take them all to an island. And we know that expands too broad for these guys. But man, I'm telling you, these TV networks, what's going on right now with these coaches and wanting to get back on the field. If there's any way, my stands will not change. If there's any way to get college football games played without stands in the fans in the stands, they are going to figure out a way to do it. I'm going to stand by that, G, until something is different. If they can figure out a way to isolate these staffs and everybody to get games played, they're going to play them.
I agree with you on fans in the stands. I don't know that I agree with you on students back on campus, because Dan Orlovsky, it seems to me that the day you decide to do that as the National Collegiate Athletic Association or whatever body it is that makes that decision, the notion of these being amateurs is gone forever, dead forever. If you were making these kids come back and none of the it's not safe enough for anybody else to come back, then in my opinion, take the word student out of student athlete forever. That would be my position, Dan. What would be yours?
Yeah, Greeny, I totally agree. I mean, you think the NCAA has issues with some people now? They would have everybody coming after them, because this would be kind of the line of demarcation that would go from they no longer are student athletes. The athletes are on scholarship, right? They are not earning any kind of income. They're on scholarship. And so once you say we are going to treat you as a student athlete completely different than everybody else, and we're going to take you away from anybody else that has tied to our institution or our university, and we're going to put you in a bubble strictly so we can play our football games to make our money, that's when the NCAA is going to have a big issue. And to Marcus's point, Greeny, it's not just the players. I mean, we talk about putting the players in the bubbles. Well, then you have to put all the coaches in the bubbles as well. They can't see their families. And you have to put the administrative staffs in the bubble and the training staffs in the bubble. A lot of these schools use student trainers to help with the athletic training department. Are those people going to become part of the bubble as well? Like, we're talking about hundreds of people that we would have, that college football would have to say, we're going to put the sport above anything else. And that's going to be a slippery slope for the NCAA.
No, I can see Marcus is raising his hand, and I know Laura has a ton more in the notes. I have to leave it here for the moment, but we will definitely come back to this, because I think there is a lot more in this to get to, and we will do it, I promise. In the meantime, we do have great football coming your way as our look back at some of the greatest Monday night football games rolls on with Week 4 of the 2009 season. It was Brett Favre's first game against Green Bay after signing with Minnesota that offseason. Packers-Vikings at the old Metrodome. It's 8 Eastern on ESPN, and you can see it on the ESPN app. Coming up, since Bill O'Brien dealt his best receiver away, would he be open to dealing his best player? Is that too crazy for words? We'll talk about it. Get up with ESPN.